Hello, everybody. Welcome to Derek's Live Chat Show, the 18th in the series. Today, I just wanted to mention the YouTube links. Keith, my webmaster, has put all the recordings onto YouTube and onto the Negotiators podcast. And those of you that saw the show on Monday will know that we had a magician on, John Hatalka, and I'm still trying to work out how he did that trick. And I've been playing it about many times. We also had Will Kintish on, who gave us some fantastic tips. So if you missed the show there, look back at that. One or two that I don't put into practice, so go back to there. And we had Ali the physio on also, telling us how to stretch our calf muscles, our quads, our glutes, and every other muscle that we have in our body. Next week, I've been talking to Justin Urquhart Stewart this morning, the guy with the red braces. You remember, he was on Radio 5 Live yesterday. I heard him on, I know him well, and I'm negotiating with him to be on Monday's show at the moment. I'm talking to him at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. So I'm working hard on your behalf to get some of the best speakers in the UK and in the world onto here. And no one's turned me down yet, so the negotiations are going well. The other thing I wanted to mention is next week, top masterclass, if you can see that. Graham Jones and I are running a top masterclass that we were supposed to be running in central London. And we are running it on Zoom, and we are running it free of charge. Despite what Graham said last week, he said it was £97, but we're running it free of charge for our friends with a discount if you want to join us live in November. And that is at 10 o'clock. And I'm going to do an Esther trick before I start asking her questions, which is putting it on a board and showing you. So it's www.topmasterclass.co.uk. But if you go in there, it'll say £97. Send me an email and I'll send you the link. We're discussing at the moment whether we should do it for 2 hours or a little bit shorter, but we generally do 17 sessions or 17 minutes. But since the advice is that now that people have only got 8 minutes attention span on Zoom, we might cut them back and have a bit of fun with that. Will Kintish sent me an article today, which talks from the Harvard Business School, which talks about Zoom fatigue. And I attached that to the email I sent some of you an hour ago, because Zoom fatigue is becoming a big problem. And that's why we want to make these meetings short and interesting. And my tip for you is, don't forget, and it's one I always say, if you don't ask, you don't get. And I've asked 18 people to come on this show and they've all said yes. I'd be delighted to be with you. Now I'm going to mute everybody. Esther, you will have to unmute yourself. Okay, so everybody is now muted, and Esther will have to unmute herself. So guys, I want to introduce to you somebody I met 5 years ago. We were both speaking at the Dominion Theatre, although we weren't on the main stage, we were in a room upstairs. Esther, it's probably better to not let that last bit tick. Oh, I thought, oh, Dominion Theatre, main stage, fantastic. Unfortunately, it was in a room upstairs through the back door, but we connected immediately. We've had some fun, and Esther's done some great things since we met, and she coaches all sorts of people on confidence, the imposter syndrome, presenting, and her latest book, which is just out, is called Goodbye Glossophobia. I don't know why you called it that. I'm sure you will tell us, Esther. However, what I'm really interested in, and I thought we would really be interested in, is Esther's role as a broadcaster. 12,500 hours of live radio, and I bet a few things went wrong there, Esther. You've produced shows with Boris on, with Alistair Campbell, and you told me a few things about Bruce Forsyth. And Bruce Forsyth's one of my, actually was one of my favourite presenters, because he was very short, sharp, did things in threes with the power of threes. He was humorous, he took the mickey out of himself, and it was as if he was in your living room on a Saturday night when he produced Strictly. So Esther, can I thank you so much for joining us today, and tell me about your scariest moment, if we could start with that.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Derek. Thank you for joining us. Good to see you all. And I left the BBC a few years ago, and now I work in business, and people say, don't you miss don't you miss radio? What don't you miss broadcasting? And actually, it's surprising the kind of characters that you come across in business as well. They're just as crazy as the media world. But when you're but people that are interested in famous names, so things that go wrong. Well, okay. So the good news is, if you're worried about the tech going wrong when you're doing Zoom or Team Microsoft Teams or Powwow or BlueJeans or whatever these platforms are that you're using, and you're worried and you're thinking, oh no, the tech goes wrong, and it does go wrong. Like, hands up if the tech has gone wrong on one of your remote meetings. Hands up. Okay, XC, nearly all of us. Or you can show you've got a reaction button there. You can show your thumb up from your reaction button. We're going to be using our reaction buttons today. Okay, so this is to make you feel a bit better about your tech going wrong. When I was at the BBC, every single time we had to pitch to like the big commissioning editors, and at one point I worked with the Strictly Come Dancing team, and we had to pitch these new ideas every quarter, and it was like this big debt deal. It was a big day, and we had to get all our pitch decks ready, and it was in PowerPoint. And every single time you'd go to press play, and the video never worked. The tech always went down. And in live radio, whenever you do a live show, a satellite link up, whether it's sport or whatever, you've seen it on television anyway. I mean, it goes wrong all the time. So one of my favorite memories of things going completely pear-shaped was, there was one time I was meant to be doing a special show. I think it was a Sunday special. And my boss had asked me, can you come in? Because we've got Cliff Richard and Gloria Honeyford coming in. It's a special one-off show and it's going to be live. Can you just come in and look after them? Can you produce it on a Sunday? So I was like, yeah, no problem. So Gloria Honeyford was lovely and early. She's lovely and she's a really nice person. And she was like, oh, you're lovely to work with. And she bought me a card, and, you know, she was really, really good to work with. And she's really good friends with Cliff Richard. Anyway, he got stuck on his private jet somewhere. He got delayed, right? And it's getting closer and closer to live on air. So it's, you know, first of all, we're 2 hours away. We're like, well, he'll get here in 2 hours. That's fine. His driver was there waiting in the airport. Anyway, to cut a long story short, he got stuck at the airport or whatever, wherever he was. We're literally about to go live. And the whole show is about Cliff Richard. We're about to do it, and it's live. And this is the problem with live. What do you do when you're going live on air and the main star of the show isn't there? What do you do? So it's a bit like having lockdown, really, when everyone's suddenly called off, they can't work in their office, and suddenly we've gone virtual. So I said, right, well, whether he's in the air or not, we're going to have to just ring him up. So we ended up doing nearly half the show. We ended up doing it on the phone, on and off with intermittent signals, and then we'd play a song, and then we'd come out, we'd ring him up again. At one point, we actually had, what's his name, the guy that does impressions. I've forgotten his name. He's a really funny guy. Oh, I've forgotten his name. Anyway, we got him doing an impression at one point of Cliff Richard when we couldn't get hold of Cliff Richard. We actually got the guy to do an impression of him and to see if the audience would guess. Anyway, the point is, it was actually a really good show because Gloria Honeyford was great. We played a load of his songs. And then as soon as we'd get a signal, we'd kind of fade the song out, come back into the conversation. I think he actually came in for the last 11 minutes or something of the live show. So it was squeaky bum time, but it was all right. You know, it was still listenable. It was remote instead of live in person.
And were you cool about that? Were you cool while it was going on, or were you? Did you have the old heartbeat going at 120 beats?
So I think if you work in a live environment, if you're used to doing live radio or television, I think it's partly personality type and partly the way your brain works. It's probably like a surgeon or whatever. You're kind of trained not to panic, because you can't control an aeroplane landing at an airport. If it's beyond your control, you've got to just think, what can we do? What's the solution? And second by second, and it's just like speaking or when you're running a masterclass with people that have come to see you and they're waiting on your every word. You have to be able to play the moment and make decisions minute by minute. So I don't think obviously it was like, what are we gonna do? Okay, so obviously you go through the, you quickly go through the options, and obviously I was on the phone with my boss saying we could cancel this, we could just say it's all off, but we're literally, you know, we've been trailing it, like coming up in 10 minutes after the news, you know, we already had done a little chat with Gloria Honeyford, oh, coming up in a moment, you know, and we'd advertise the hell out of it. I think you just have to come up with solutions. So it's one of my many, I've got a few odd skills. I'm not very good at lots of things in life, but in life, I'm probably quite good at total meltdown disaster moments, and you, whatever happens, the show must go on, and I will make up anything for it to go on.
Brilliant, brilliant. Now, let's move on to prime ministers, can we? If you're prepared to tell us a few secrets. I know that you've had Boris Johnson on the show, and I also know you've had Theresa May. And you told me something about Wing It Wonders. I don't
know. Yeah, and David Cameron's been in a few, he was in a few times. So the main thing is, when Boris Johnson was mayor, every month he used to come in and do question times. Mayor's Question Time, and it was a live call-in show, and you could always tell when Boris Johnson came in, because if everything was normal and quiet, we might be doing the breakfast show or whatever, and then suddenly you would hear poof, poof, and like laughter. It's like, what is going on out there? And then crash. And basically what happened is that Boris Johnson has come in reception on a bike and knocked over the plants and knocked over the camera. And it was an open plan office, so even the news crew would like be, you know, he'd make them laugh, and he'd go into the finance department opposite the news where they were doing the news. And the thing about Boris Johnson is he is quite a larger than life character, and he does like to make people laugh, and he likes to show, you know, he's completely, what should we say, you know, people think that he's a buffoon and all the rest of it. He's a larger than life character. He's what I would call, I think I mentioned to you before, a wing it wonder. So you have two types of presenter. Okay, there's obviously more than two types, but in my experience, more or less, you can put yourself in one of these camps. You're either a wing it wonder or a planarina. So Boris Johnson was what I would call a perfect specimen of a wing it wonder. He'd come in, even if he had 30 seconds to prep, he'd go, right, what am I doing? Where am I going? You'd literally have to grab him, point him in the right direction, and go, you're speaking about housing, here's the Daily Telegraph, read the front page, you're going to go live in 3, 2, smile, 1, off. That was it. By the way, you're on the BBC, not ITV, and don't swear. He literally wouldn't know, like, what studio he was in. Who, what, wow, how, what? So that was his call to Wing It Wonder. Now, I think as mayor of London, he got away with it because he is funny. I mean, he genuinely is a funny guy, and he does give you attention, and he does genuinely want, you know, a reaction from people. But the polar opposite of Boris Johnson at the time, Theresa May, actually, I met David Cameron when he was prime minister as well. When David Cameron came in, it was literally like silence. Nobody speaks. So it's the complete opposite, but it was like kind of, oh, the Prime Minister's walked in. But he was very nice and very well-mannered. He's probably a bit of a planarina, but the ultimate planarina was Theresa May. So she had come in, and she came in before she was Prime Minister. And I remember her coming in, and I'm in awe of her, actually. I mean, I can't believe she can do that job. I mean, I do think, how have you got such a thick skin? How can you be so poised? But she'd come in, and, you know, and she was very, very structured and knew exactly what she was going to say. And then there was one time, you know, we were doing a show, and I think it was Vanessa Feltz, or I can't remember who the presenter was, and we said, so, you know, your kitten heels, or something about kitten heels, and that's what she's famous for, right? And she literally just went, I've come here to talk about policies, not fashion. You know, just like,
brilliant.
I'm not moving. I am strong and stable, and I will not move from my plan. I have planned exactly what I'm going to do, what I'm going to say, and whatever you ask me, I will stick with my plan. So, I mean, you might recognize yourself in one of those types, a planarina who likes to plan. There's nothing wrong with both. There's good points and bad points. But it's quite useful to know what you're dealing with. And it's quite useful to know what type of speaker you are. So you can plan if you are a Wing It Wonder, beware, because you'll miss things out. Plan to be a Wing It Wonder. You can plan how you're going to play the room and how you're going to make the most of your improvisational skills. If you're a planarina, you have to plan for flex, plan to improvise. And I would suggest a 15% improvisation or 15% wiggle room. Because if you don't, if you're so planned and you're live and something happens, but you just can't deal with it because you're too focused on your plan, the audience won't like you. They won't like it.
Fantastic, Esther. The other thing is, I would say, is that we're all speakers. We're all speaking to people all the time, whether it's Alison when she's treating a patient. We're all presenting. We're all speakers. So we should be thinking about how we come across, because the first impressions are really important. If we're trying to influence people and we haven't prepared how to do the influencing, then we're not going to get such a good job, are we? Fail to plan to fail. That's one of my tips that I've used up for tomorrow.
The trouble is, because I'm a bit of a Wing It Wonder, and I get a bit scared of plans, but I absolutely know I have to plan. I mean, obviously I've been a senior producer for many years, and you know, you have to plan ahead all the time. But I like to have a bit of both. I have learnt how to plan and be able to flex as well at the same time.
Now, tell us a little bit about Bruce Forsyth. And for our friends in America, Bruce Forsyth is a very famous comedian, TV presenter, MC on the London Palladium and all sorts of things, and still was presenting Strictly Come Dancing till he was 84. And he's just one of my heroes, the simplicity of how he did it. Tell us about Bruce.
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like everyone to... Can you unmute everyone? Can you unmute everyone? Because I'm going to do the Bruce Forsyth hello. He goes... Hello, nice to see you.
Nice.
Nice. The clap. Yay. Okay, good. And I might do a bit more Brucey bonuses in a minute. Okay, now we can mute ourselves again. Although there's no terrible Darth Vaders on our call today.
I'll leave it unmuted, Esther. Unless
all right, fine. Please feel free. If you want to talk, you can put your thumbs up sign up and I can come to you, because we will be doing a few questions in a moment, won't we?
But if I mute everybody, you'll have to unmute yourself. That's all.
Just okay, fine. So that's fine. I think unmuted and just go on, shout out whenever you want. This is informal. You see, I'm a Wing It Wonder. I like you to join in with me. So just a quick story about Bruce Forsyth. When I was quite heavily pregnant, I was allowed to go and be in the audience for Strictly Come Dancing when they filmed it, because I was working with the team to come up with the new program ideas at that particular time. Hence, I was pitching a lot where the tech used to fail us. Anyway, as part of the team, you can go and watch Strictly Come Dancing being filmed as much as you want, but it goes on for hours. It's a nightmare. If you sit in the studio, it's hot, you get warm orange juice and a Kit Kat, and it makes you more thirsty, because orange juice doesn't really quench your thirst. Anyway, I did get to see, you know, really at first hand. I had a chat with Bruce Forsyth and his team when I was watching the filming. But the fascinating thing there is that Bruce Forsyth, wow, I mean, he has everything. He is funny. He obviously then, he went in his 80s, he had his experience. He knows every trick in the book. He's warm. He is precise as well. I mean, he's craft. He's good at dancing. He's good at improvisation. He's good at playing the room. He's always aware of the audience. In fact, he's really aware of the audience between takes as well. So he's like, "How's it all? You're getting hot. Are you hot enough?" You know, he's really keeping the audience with him all the time. The live audience, even when we're not filming, he was keeping the audience with him. I found it really fascinating, because television's actually very planned. I love working in live television, but it is planned literally to the second. That's why you've got the PA in the gallery counting you down 20 seconds, 28, 29, you know, with a clock, and everything is timed, and you have to flex it a bit, but you have to be very well planned. And quite often the script is already, well, it has to be pre-written in order to put on the auto cue. So how do you then be off the cuff if everything's already planned and scripted? So he actually had a gag man. He had a gag, not somebody to make him sick, somebody to write him quick fix gags. And I can't remember the name of the guy, Terry. I can't remember his name. I think he was the warm-up guy as well. He's one of these like quick, you know, comedian types, but very, very precise one-line gags. He was brilliant at one-line gags. So what he'd do is walk around with Bruce, And then something might have happened with the Paso Doble, and within a few moments he's thinking, right, Paso Doble, and he would come up with a pun or a gag. And so all your things, the power of three and the puns, like, it's Snap, Crackle, Pop, or whatever, it's Paso Doble, pie, or whatever. The guy would come up with these gags minute by minute, and he would, and literally had a post-it note, and he would shove it in Bruce Forsyth's hand, to the point where Bruce Forsyth would just be like talking to the, oh, hello, you're on, you lovely, thanks for coming. And the guy would shove a bit of note, a bit of paper in his hand, and he'd look down and he'd be like, good one, good one. And then they'd go, right, we're going live now in 3, 2, hello, welcome back. Well, now we've had Paso Doble pie or whatever. And the guy, that's how he worked. So that's a good, I mean, not that you can have a gag man with you when you're doing your gigs, I think what the tip there is, you know, you're not all, nobody is naturally 100% funny all the time. And when you are planned, what's that?
You are.
Oh, well, yes, but not always for the right reasons.
I didn't say funny, I was going to mean funny peculiar.
Well, you know what? Thank you for saying that, Will, because when I realised that people thought I was slightly bonkers, so I've been called a lunatic, box of frogs, fruitcake. When I realised that actually, rather than get embarrassed about it and just embrace it, and just go with it. Yeah, I've just gone along with it. I mean, I would say what I learned from Bruce Forsyth and what I've learned from good speakers like yourself, Derek, like you, Will, and I don't know the rest of you well enough to be able to comment, but a really good tip from Bruce Forsyth is the warmth, the generosity, the, you know, you feel that he does care about you. And which brings me onto my little tip about using a camera. When you're using a camera, it's about treating that camera like one person that you're very intimate with, that one person that you're giving your attention to, you're giving your warmth, your generosity. And when you're nervous and you're worried about your script and you're worried, it's, you forget sometimes that the thing that will bring the audience with you, the thing that will work, is giving first, being generous first. And I think Bruce Forsyth, he just had it, didn't he? He just had that warmth, that generosity. You felt that he really did love you when he was talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And one of those tricks, of course, is as speakers, and everybody isn't a speaker here, of course, there's a lot of people there's a lot of people that still have to present, is to stick around afterwards, isn't it? The best speakers stick around afterwards and answer questions for as long as people want to have questions answered. And that, they're the little extras that we all know. Esther, before I throw it open, tell us a little bit about your book.
Oh, yes. So, Goodbye Glossophobia. In fact, if you're watching this now, whether it's a recording or not, I actually give away a free prize every Friday. Every Friday, somebody is in my virtual hat. So you could win a free signed copy. Right. Goodbye Glossophobia. I'm going to give you the details in a sec. Glossophobia is the fear of public speaking. Glosso is the ancient Greek for tongue. So it's like the fear of speaking, the fear of tongue, like mother tongue, like a language, the fear of speech, fear of speaking. And I wrote the book because I was glossophobic. Like it says on the internet, if you Google glossophobia, it says Prince Harry, like 75% of us, are afraid of public speaking. It's not a new phenomenon. We know that people don't like public speaking. I myself really suffered from glossophobia and the fear of shaking, the fear of sweating, the fear of making a fool of myself. And I wrote the book because many of my clients were holding themselves back because of this fear of being in the spotlight, the fear of failure, the fear of the camera on them, the audience looking at them. They felt like a lamb to the slaughter. And this book, it won an award for the short business book of the year. It's incredibly short. It literally takes less than 2 hours to read. So if you want to win a signed copy, I have prepared my email address. All you got to do is email me, Esther, spelled E-S-T-H-E-R, at estherstanhope.com. There you go. Esther@estherstanhope.com. And if you write tips, please. Is that backwards or is that the right way around?
That's fine. Brilliant.
Yep. For me, it's backwards. Okay. Esther@estherstanhope.com. If you write tips, please, I will send you my Friday tips. And my tips could be tips from Barack Obama, tips from Clinton, tips from George Clooney, how George Clooney handles a script, tips on how not to go red, tips on what to wear. I have got probably, I've got more than 85 tips. Who was it that said they had 85 tips? Was that Tim? Jim, yeah. I've got Texan Tim. I've got more than 85 tips, Texan Tim, but I've got loads of tips in the book. So please send me tips, please. Esther@estherstandup.com. And you'll be put in the virtual hat and I will send this to you in a bright pink envelope. And it doesn't matter where you are in the world. I don't mind paying £7 for postage. If you've won the book, I'm sending it to you. So please apply for the book. And that's my little competition time.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll open up for questions, a few questions before we close the recording off. And then Esther, will you stay for some questions that aren't on the recording?
For the X-rated version.
The X-rated version, that's the one we really want, but we can't put that on YouTube, can we? Good.
Yes, first Will.
Question. Will Kintish, first question.
The one thing I hate more than anything is two-faced people. And I'm absolutely delighted to hear that Bruce Forsyth was not two-faced, because we all know there are famous people who, and I know a few people, who I can't stand them anymore because people who know them off stage, they're horrible, horrible people. Whereas on stage, they've got to be likable people. And when you talk about Bruce Forsyth saying what a great guy he was, thank you, because I must have watched him for 50 years. And I thought, what a great guy. So thank you for that.
Well, I was only four then, Will, so I wouldn't know about the London.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, actually, funnily enough, when you're working in a studio environment, you've got lots of guests coming in and out all the time. You see a lot of people. I mean, what I've learned is that quite often big stars, big personalities, dancers, singers, people like Jon Bon Jovi, for example, Sharon Stone, big, you know, people that you see on the silver screen, quite often they're introvert, but then they're only extrovert when they're playing a part. Yeah. So for example, Harry Hill, the comedian, he's really shy. He's not a nasty person or anything. He's just so shy. Some people are so shy. So they sit there, you know, reading because they're actually a bit afraid of people. And I think you just get to know quickly, you know, if it's that they're a bit shy, and it's not that they're rude, but some people really aren't shy. I'll give you an example of, I know, Gok Wan. You know Gok Wan, the guy that does How to Look Good Naked?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember, I shouldn't really say this, but I remember him coming in and he was like, I'm like, hi, Gok. Oh, we all got dressed up specially because we're worried about what you might say about our fashion. He went, oh, darling, don't worry about what you look like. You look gorgeous, darling. And he stank of cigarettes. He'd been outside smoking like a lovey. It's just, you know, so he was very ab fab.
Do you know any who were there quite a few who really were horrible, unfriendly people?
What do you think?
that's for the next session when
we. Yeah, I will tell. I will tell you. I'll tell you in the next when we press stop. There's quite a few
in the chat box for you, Esther. If I can read those out.
Yeah, of course.
If you were glossophobic, how did you get into your profession and put yourself under the spotlight?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I kind of put myself, I am a the show must go on type person. And when I was started my business, which was to help people to speak well and use all the tips that I've been helping all my professional presenters with, it was quite quickly after I'd run a few small sessions, people started asking me, whether it was Deloitte or Barclays Bank or whatever, people would ask me, can you come and speak at our Women's Network? I'd be like, well, what do you mean speak? Will you come and speak to, you know, 40 women? I'd be like, 40? Oh, I could do groups of, you know, eight or whatever, but 40? And I hadn't really been asked to do big groups. Like even a group of 20 for me, it wasn't really what I started out doing. And I hadn't really thought it through. I didn't really know about speaking or speaking to large numbers of people. And I suddenly realized, I'm going to have to do this. And then I thought, I'm going to have to be good as well, because people think I've got to be good if I'm talking about speaking. And I've got to say, I wasn't that great at the beginning, and my mind did go blank and I did shake and I did sweat. But I made myself do it, and I I actually did seek advice. I tried my own tips. I've tried and tested lots and lots of tips. So I really am a human experiment. I've put myself through the mill. I've tried this kind of scripting, that kind of non-scripting. And all I can say is I just did it. And then I did it again. And when I failed, I did it again. And I did it again. And the more you do it, it really is like it's learning any skill in the world. Or coping with any fear, you just face it and you face it and you feel the fear and you do it anyway and you do it again and you do it again. So often when I'm working with people in business, whether it's for a global bank or what have you, people say, I hate speaking out in public. You know, it's a nightmare when I'm doing the quarterly results. And I would say the worst thing that you can do is have a big speaking event quarterly. So four times a year, if you're speaking on a big scale, like whether it's a recorded results presentation for Goldman Sachs or whether it's a conference, it means you're having four nightmares every year, right? Because if you did it every week, you wouldn't feel like that. So don't have these big set pieces and then spend hours and months worrying about them and writing them and learning them. Do it every week or every day. Practice doing something. That's the best tip I can give.
Next question. In fact, what you're saying is your enthusiasm, but you're reminding me of what Winston Churchill said in the Second World War, never, ever, ever, ever give up. And
Never give in.
Go for it. Absolutely fantastic. Next question. This one's from Chicago.
Hi.
You have an infectious manner, a giggle here and there, and a serious comment there. How much of that is natural and spontaneous, and how much is it a talent that you've learned and call on?
Who from Chicago? So that
Kevin,
must be
Kevin O'Connor from Chicago.
Is that from Kevin? Hi, Kevin.
No, that's Alan from Guildford.
Oh, Alan. Oh.
I don't know if Kevin's. Are you on, Kevin?
He hasn't got his
mic
up.
Yes, I'm on. Yeah, I'm on.
Was that your question, Kevin?
Yes, it was. Yes, from Chicago.
Yeah. So Kevin, here's the thing, and when Will knows me Will knows me a lot, and Will knows that I am incredibly hard on myself. I'm actually semi-dyslexic. I can't even write. Great plug for the book. I didn't think I could really write. But the book's really about ideas and tips. It's not really about how clever you are at grammar and writing. It's more about the tips. I'm not really a natural speaker. I'm not really eloquent. I'm semi well educated, right? But what I've learned is, I've learned it. Yeah, and definitely, it's a whole host of skills that you need in order to give away tips and in order to serve your audience and speak well and look confident and sound confident and all those things. You have to practice it. You do, and it is a learned skill. It's when people say, "Oh yeah, you're either born with charisma or you haven't." Well, you know what? Some people have a naturally charismatic personality, but you can learn it. You can learn to serve your audience well. There's no reason why anyone can't learn how to have a better voice, how to tell a story. Anyone can tell a story. Anyone can have a better voice. Anyone can tell a joke.
But you
need, it's the way you tell them.
Yeah, and you need to rehearse. You need to practice.
But not practicing a script. This is where my clients quite often go wrong. They think practicing a script over and over again is going to help them. Actually, practicing a script is actually detrimental. That's not the right practice. The right practice is by doing it. Just keep doing it with family, friends, you know, and do gigs a lot. So that what you're doing, Derek, is brilliant. You're putting on a show.
But did you have to practice this kind of infectious, fun giggle you have? Is that a skill, or is that just what you're like normally? Because it's very engaging, and then you throw in something serious, we're paying attention, then you go back to kind of the fun, infectious part of you, and I wonder if, is that a skill that you have developed over time, or is that just what you'd be like if we met you 15 years ago over coffee?
Well, do you know what? I'll let you into a secret. I've actually just recently met an opera singer virtually, and she's going to give me a couple of voice coaching sessions because I love developing. You know, I want to learn all the time. That's why I hang out with Will Kindish. And believe it or not, he does teach me a thing or two.
Only because I'm 30 years older than you.
But you know, he gives me, and also Derek's given me some, I mean, just little tiny tips that I know you remember, Derek. And Derek said to me, I'll tell you when we're not recording what Derek said to me. Remind me. But let me just stop telling you this little secret about this. She's an opera singer and she's going to give me some voice coaching. And just this is a 2-minute tip she said to me. I said, well, I'd quite like to, you know, pay some money and for you to help me, because I am interested in working on my voice. I've always done drama. I've always done performance related work. But quite often I've been the person helping clients, helping the presenter, helping the actor. It's not necessarily me doing it. So I know the theory of all these tips, but I don't necessarily know it. But she did tell me a really good tip the other day about my voice, which I've probably put into practice a tiny bit today. She said, the thing about your voice, and this is what we're going to be working on, she says, you're like the express train. You're the train, and it leaves the station. It goes, it doesn't stop. It's, get to Leeds or Manchester. Get to the express train to Manchester. Is there an express train to Manchester? It doesn't stop. She said, you know, what we need to do with you, we need to stop at some stations. And I thought, oh my goodness, my mum would love that, because my mum's like, you're so fast, you don't stop, you're so fast, you talk too fast.
Esther, we got three questions. We're nearly out of time.
Okay, nearly out of time. But does that answer your question, Kevin?
It'll have to.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you. Perfect.
Thank you, Kevin.
He's also asked another question in the chat box.
Oh, well, we'll do it. We can do your question after we stop.
You've got 30 seconds to answer each one of these questions.
Okay, I'll be super. Okay, quick fire. Go on.
Says, who's the most interesting person you've met and why?
Danny DeVito. Short, not very good looking, totally 100% charismatic, owned the room. And when he walked in, he was like, hey, how you doing? Hey, look at that tie. Hey, Mark Quigley, I like that red top on you. And John Lisby, look at you sitting there looking so relaxed, like a Hollywood movie star. You know, literally, he's like, he gave everyone attention and a comment, and it was unbelievable. And I thought, that is quite something.
Brilliant.
That was 29 seconds.
Yeah, brilliant. That was brilliant. You need to come on our team for the big competition tomorrow evening in that case. Kevin says from Chicago again, what are the differences between a man speaking and a woman speaking?
Oh, do you know what? We could do a whole session on that. A whole session, because I work with a lot with women in leadership positions. And the main difference is that women and men do approach speaking, and audiences approach men and women in a slightly different way. Whether you like that concept or not, definitely there's the trend that when I'm working with people, there's a difference between men and women. Men are more frightened of failing, and I think women are more afraid of being judged and having imposter syndrome, thinking they're not good enough. And so there's a whole theme there. So I couldn't possibly go into it. It's a whole book. My next book will be about that.
Yes, can I test my closing skills on you?
Oh, go on, yes.
Will you come back and do that for us on the show again?
So the gender, the difference between men and women, absolutely, why not? Yeah. Fantastic. We're going to call it Girl Man Interrupted.
Brilliant. That's fantastic.
I did learn that one. That's a pre-thought-through gag.
Okay. Esther Stanhope, estherstanhope.com, isn't it?
Estherstanhope.com. Oh, yes. Thank you, John. John's clapping. I'm going to clap myself. Okay, let's all take ourselves off mute and all give each other a clap. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for your engagement. Thank you, Will, for coming.
I recommended Esther to you, Derek. And I knew she wouldn't let you down.
I'd already asked Esther before you did that. Will, you've got to keep up.
They're fighting over you now, Esther.
Yeah. I love that. And I definitely want to stay on. I'm going to stay to get some back issue comments from Alison.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Esther. Thanks to everybody for joining the live web chat show. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.